Alright, so we were in reading chapter 2. We just broke into the beginning of that lesson last class on page 10. What was under discussion was the defense of Paul's apostleship, and specifically Paul's relationship with the other apostles. That discussion began in the end of chapter 1. And continue on through the rest of chapter 2, where we're at today. We looked at some of the history of Paul and his travels, and how he didn't seek out the apostles when he first was converted. He didn't immediately rush to Jerusalem. It took him 3 years before he got there, and then again he came back for this particular case with the council in Jerusalem 14 years probably after his conversion. And the question we started working on Wednesday night was, why did Paul travel to Jerusalem for the Jerusalem Council trip? What was his purpose there?
Because of a revelation to preach the gospel to Gentiles?
Yes, I got a Bible. Uh-huh. Another Bible.
It's in the coffee room.
Probably. Don't you have it memorized?
No idea.
And it come up because Paul's brethren were coming in and talking with the Gentiles. He had taught the gospel to go back under the law and be circumcised. And so these brethren had come from the Jerusalem church. And so he didn't go back there to make sure that his gospel was right. It's just that he went there to verify the work he'd done and to make sure that the Gentile brethren knew that the false brethren were not teaching something, and not sent by the Jerusalem are they apostles?
That's correct. And sorry, someone mentioned it was by revelation, correct? Was that you, Don?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I got distracted by losing my Bible.
No Bible.
Yes. That's absolutely correct. And verse 2 says, in Galatians 2:2, he says he went there by revelation. And exactly as Linda mentioned, it wasn't the idea that he was going there to, he was sent there to learn the truth, that he was, going to find out what the final decision would be. We see him in Galatians 5, that says that whom he gave place in the... To whom we gave place in the way of seduction, no, not for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. And also in Acts 15, verses 1 and 2, and 12. Discussing, certain men came down from Judea and taught the brethren, saying, except ye be circumcised after the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. When Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and questioning with them, the brethren appointed that Paul and Barnabas and certain other of them should go to Jerusalem unto the apostles and elders about this question. And we see from that verse alone that before he ever went to Jerusalem, before he ever thought about going, before anyone said, we would like you to go, he was already disputing what these men were preaching, that they, the Gentiles, needed to be circumcised. Yes, Mike?
This is not class in Acts 15, and I'm not trying to push it or Acts 15. I mean, a study of Acts 15. Obviously, there's some tie-ins between this chapter and Acts 15, and so you can't help but talk about the two.
Yes.
But one of the things about Acts 15, and I would suggest that this may be a reason that we have all this detail about that chapter, is that the Spirit is teaching us today how to solve issues on the doctrinal nature, how to study, and how to come up with the truth. Because the Bible doesn't necessarily answer every single question that comes up, maybe the way we'd like to see it, thou shalt not, or something like that. So we have to use what really is referred to as logical reasoning processes. And those reasoning processes are going to need to lead us to what's really a necessary conclusion. And, or they're not going to, but they're going to work us to an end. And so I think that's a lot of what Acts 15 is for us today. We don't have an issue with circumcision or going back to the law, but we have other questions that come up. So we have to learn how to solve these other questions that come up. Acts 15 is extremely important for that end. So one thing in studying Acts 15, you don't see the Spirit involved except on both ends. You see here that he's told to go by revelation. And on the other end, you see the Spirit approving of their solution to send this letter to the Gentiles. But in between, in their discussion, you don't see the Spirit involved. You see men coming together and using logical reasoning processes. Peter shows a reasoning process. Paul and Barnabas show a reasoning process. And then James shows a reasoning process. And so you see these reasoning processes coming together to form what we call not just a conclusion, but a necessary conclusion. There is no other acceptable conclusion that logic, you know, good logic would lead to. And so and that conclusion is obviously that we don't want to go back to the old law, circumcision, part of the old law, so we don't need divine circumcision. That's the necessary conclusion. So in that light, what he says here in chapter 2, in order to make sure I was not running or had not run in vain, this was from the human standpoint. From the human standpoint, to use the logical processes of thinking that we have, to bump it against what other apostles had to say and against what the Judaizing teachers had to say, and then use the reasoning processes to ensure that he was not running in vain. Now, he himself was confident that he was not running in vain. But to run it through the mill, so to speak, and have it tested, you know, is a step beyond. And so this was the testing ground to prove that his running was not in vain. So there was a testing involved, but the testing was from the human standpoint. God was satisfied because God was working through him the miracles. And that was his point, you know, in Acts 15. So this was the human effort to use what God has given us to have a reasoning process and come to a necessary conclusion, if there's a necessary conclusion to come to. Sometimes reasoning process will allow more than one conclusion, so you don't necessarily have a necessary conclusion. And we use that, for instance, in Acts 20 in verse 7, where it says they came for the first day of the week to break bread. We use our reasoning processes, you see, to come to a necessary conclusion. And so that's the way we have to, you know, look at a lot of things. So I've taken up enough time. But,
yes. Yeah. I can agree with everything you said. And that's correct. We don't see the direct influence of the Spirit at that meeting coming down and saying, God says this. They've used past, you know, exactly from through logic shown from the past experiences of God's influence, the why they can come to the reasonable conclusion.
Michael, in verse 15, note, in an indirect way, the Spirit, the words of the prophets agree. This is how James gave his speech, was to get the Gentiles into salvation and everything. And so the Spirit had everything to do with getting the word and the prophets and everything. So along with everything that Mike said, which is true, that teaches us to harmonize Scripture and to come to help in that conclusion.
Correct. And it is important, as Mike said, that we logically come to that decision because, yeah, back then they had the apostles and a direct influence of the Holy Spirit, which we lack today. But we can still use logic. We can still reason from the Scriptures and from the truth that was given to us from the Spirit at that time. So,
one clarifying point, though, the Spirit was involved. It was by revelation 2 and 2 in Galatians. Just as the Spirit got Peter and Cornelius together, the Spirit got Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch together there. The Spirit works, but the Spirit didn't actually do the conversion or the teaching.
Correct.
So that builds exactly what's being said.
Yes. Not as direct as sometimes we like.
Right.
Thank you. So Paul went there with Barnabas and Titus to not to learn what the truth was, but to persuade everyone else of the truth, logically, to communicate to them, you know, everything they seen, just as they said in Acts 15, verse 12, where they told everyone what had been going on in their gospel and the ministry to the Gentiles. And I was going to bring up, Mike sort of hit it already a little bit, but in there in Galatians, the end of verse 2, where it said, you know, it mentions he met privately with some who are of repute, lest by any means I should be running or had run in vain. And you're going to question, you know, why do you think he did that? Because it doesn't really discuss why he did that, so it's a little bit of conjecture. But we know it's the fact that he didn't want to have done all this work in vain, that it'd be turned futile. And you don't have any further discussion on that besides what Mike had already mentioned?
There's a detail here that's not in Acts 15, but that is this private meeting among those who send influence.
Yes.
You don't see that particular aspect referred to in the 15th chapter in Acts.
Well, I think you do a little bit. It mentions when he first got to Jerusalem that he met with the elders and the apostles first.
Okay. I thought it said in the church.
And then I think, and then it says he went to the church. 15. It says, at the end of verse 2, no, they should go up to Jerusalem, the apostles and the elders, but therefore they being brought on their way to the church, passed through, verse 4. And they were coming to Jerusalem to receive the church and the apostles and the elders, and they rehearsed all the things that God had done with them. So yeah, maybe it was with the church as well, but it doesn't necessarily mean that this was the very council meeting, so there may have been that, it may not have been the entire church. Anyway, it's not a big thing. I didn't want to drag down into that. But some of the thoughts were that since at that time of the council, it was a logical discussion. Paul is going there to communicate, to just reason with them. He met with those of repute. You know, when you get in a large audience, you've heard of the other term, herding cats, you get a large diversity of thoughts of people, and things can get run away from you. And so this could be insight into that he met with the elders and the apostles and the elders first to get alignment with them, and then to present to the larger assembly, where we know that someone stood up and said, people have to be circumcised, and which is a direct contrast with Paul. And if some one person believed it, there's probably more than one person believing it. You can get things running away.
Micah 15:6 does mention the apostles and elders came together to look into the matter. Again, I don't know if that's exactly the same meaning as this private meeting in 2 and verse 2.
That's the verse I was looking for earlier. Yeah,
apparently there were several meetings that they were under. As you said, the primary point is the fact that Paul was trying to work through the issue, not going to get information. He was going to share information, and in doing so, wanted to make sure that he was considerate of others and worked the process.
You didn't want all the effort to be in vain. You wanted people to come to the truth. Back to Galatians. So, looking at Galatians in verse 3, we see what happened in 2. We see why the purpose of Paul while he was traveling there. And this is actually sort of an aside, because the reason why Paul traveled there, you know, its purpose is ultimately, in why it's discussed here in Galatians, is all about defending his apostleship. And we see that reason there that is important, is key, is why he traveled there. Some might say, oh, he traveled to the people of repute. The apostles in Jerusalem, they had all the answers. That's why Paul went there, to get the answers. He was below them. And we see the reason why he went there wasn't that case at all. It was that he was there, going there to communicate to them, that he was discussing this. He'd already had his mind made up before he ever left. So it wasn't a matter of gaining knowledge from the apostles. In Galatians 2:3, I'm going to ask, how do you interpret that with Titus and his circumcision in verse 2-3? It says, but not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised.
Well, they were saying that it was necessary, that he had to be circumcised, and they were aware that they were then later going to be teaching against.
Is it here? Here where he wasn't compelled. Was he compelled or was he not compelled?
It was required.
He didn't feel like it was required.
Yes, his own conscience didn't feel like he required him of it. Here, people were compelling him.
The scriptures enable us to make a comparison between the situation of Titus and the situation of Timothy.
Yes.
Where it was known in Acts 16 that Timothy's father was a Greek, and I suppose according to their customs, Timothy would not have been circumcised. And so the Jews would have known that. And so in that case, it was to keep it from becoming an issue. Let's don't fight that battle. Let's go ahead and circumcise and just move on. In this case, though, it would have been because somebody would have been forcing and say, well, Titus, he's got to be circumcised.
A doctrinal issue.
Yeah, so now if you give into it, it's because you're succumbing. Paul, it goes on to say in verse 5, to them we did not yield in submission even for a moment. For Titus to have been circumcised would have
to give in to their doctrine.
So one, it was before it ever became an issue. So let's don't have the issue. The other one, it's already an issue. We can't give in on it.
It's the very issue that's being discussed.
Correct.
So, I mean, it just reinforces Paul as that you guys don't have it right.
That's right. And like I said, you know, Titus was a companion, but you know, specifically mentioned here, he was a Greek. And Paul took him with him as perhaps an example, as a case in point. He brought one of the Greeks back with him. You know, people are demanding, when he was in Antioch, those false teachers came to Antioch and demanded everyone had to be circumcised. He went to Jerusalem and someone else stood up at the council and said the same thing. People were demanding it as doctrine. And that's the key point, is that he wasn't, you know, they resisted it. He wasn't ever compelled, felt obligated to do it from a doctrinal standpoint. And yeah, in comparison to might mention Timothy, Acts 16, verse 3 through 4, you know, it talks about Timothy and that he was circumcised. If you look back to that one real quick, in 16, verse 3 and 4. Then would Paul have to go forth with him, and he took and circumcised him because of the Jews that were in those parts. For they all knew that his father was a Greek. And they went on their way through the cities. They delivered them the decrees to keep, which had been ordained to the apostles and elders that were at Jerusalem. And I think, I believe that there's a key point there, and the fact that it shows he did circumcise Timothy. And right after that it mentions, and they continued to deliver the statements, the result of the Jerusalem council through those churches, which was, you don't have to be circumcised. So there was a preference, not a doctrinal issue. Mike, do you have a further question or comment?
Yeah, and it's off the subject. But there's a character, Titus, here in Galatians 2 and verse 3. Titus evidently was spiritually a tough character because, you know, he was the one that had to receive the impact of being circumcised. He would have put himself under, you know, a position to be attacked by Judaizing teachers and so forth. And he received the brunt of some of that. And yet, he's the one that Paul left in Crete to establish, you know, elders in every church, the book of Titus. And when you read the first chapter of the book of Titus, the problem there on that island was Judaizing teachers. So, perhaps Titus was well acquainted with problems with Judaizing teachers, but when you read, you know, the impact of Titus 1, they were in bad shape as far as the influence of Judaizing teachers. Titus must have been a spiritually tough character, you know, and able to really take the heat, so to speak. So to me, there's an admiration for Titus, which we see kind of beginning right here.
I agree with that. And I also wanted to point out, in verse 4, following the discussion of Titus, how he was not compelled to be circumcised. And it says, "And that because of the false brethren privily brought in, who came in privily to spy out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage." Here, of course, to be circumcised is to bring them back into bondage. And that's the very thing that Paul, the Titus, they were resisting, to be brought into bondage, the bondage of the law of Moses, which, of course, is what frees us, or what Christ had freed us, freed them from, and freed the Gentiles as well. Any further comments on that? They're all very good comments. Thank you. So, continuing on, who are those in Jerusalem who seem to be something or have repute in Galatians verse 6 and also in verse 9? Someone want to read 6 and 9 for me, please?
"But from those who were of high reputation, what they were makes no difference to me. God shows no partiality. Well, those who were of reputation contributed nothing to me. And recognizing the grace that had been given to me, James and Cephas and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship, that we might go to the Gentiles and they to be circumcised."
Who do we think those people are? Something, the something people, who were they in Jerusalem?
Maybe it's clarified in that ninth verse, James, Cephas, and John, who seem to be pillars. Maybe those three.
Yes. And maybe them, and maybe other men in the congregation, some elders who, maybe some Judaizing teachers who claim to be something.
James, the Lord's brother.
Yeah. I tend to agree. I think it's Peter, James, and John at the minimum. So here he mentions that seem to be, something. Not to give them fault, that you may not be, that they were trying to be something. Judaizing teachers might be trying to be something to convert other people, to change them over. Well, we know that men give rank on other men sometimes without discussion. Human characteristic we have is to give other men rank, to give other men position. And Peter, James, and John, being apostles, being preachers, converting people, may have in other people's minds that may have been the case, to give them some higher authority. And I think that the reason Paul is mentioning this whole topic is Paul's defending himself. Evidently, someone who went to Galatians is teaching these doctrines, these false doctrines, and is attacking his apostleship, using the other apostles, their position, maybe you're just in that person's mind, that establishing those same questions in the minds of the Galatians. They're undermining Paul's authority, that, don't listen to him. We don't ever see that actually written out anywhere, but he spent two chapters discussing why he's an apostle, so that something along that lines must have been done. Otherwise, why spend two chapters discussing something that everyone already knows is true? Do you have a comment?
In our human organizations, and yourself in your own work, there are people who are not necessarily above somebody else, but they just, due to their nature, they evolve as leaders. And such, maybe the same with, these three men here.
Or anyone else.
God didn't place them in this position, but they evolve as leaders due to a work ethic, their belief in a cause, such as that.
Yeah. We do know that Christ, God, did give the apostles position. This isn't to undermine the apostles. They were given special powers. They were given the Spirit to preach and teach to others, so they do have a position. But again, we're focusing on Paul with respect to the other apostles.
That's an excellent point. He's not criticizing these men. He's simply positioning the word versus the men. That's the whole point here. Are we?
Yes, that's the direction we're going.
Okay.
The next question I had was, you know, did Paul give preference to those men of repute or anyone, you know, who, anyone else who was in Jerusalem? What level did Paul place himself or compare himself with? And we look at Galatians, you know, all the verses there, 6 through 9. Let's go ahead and read 6 through 9, the whole thing. Someone wants to read that for me, please?
But of these who seem to be somewhat, whatsoever it, they were, it maketh no matter to me, God accepteth no man's person. For they who seemed to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. But contrarywise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcision was unto Peter. For he that wrought effectually in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty in me towards the Gentiles. And when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given unto me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship that we should go into the heathen and they into the circumcision.
Yes, thank you. And also, if you turn to 2 Corinthians, chapter 11, the beginning of 11. Chapter 11, verse 5. For I reckon that I am not a whit behind the very chiefest apostles. And also in chapter 12, 11 through 12. I am become foolish. Ye compelled me. For I ought to have been commended of you. For in nothing was I behind the very chiefest apostles, though I am nothing. Truly the signs of the apostle were wrought among you in all patience, by signs and wonders and mighty works. For what is there wherein you were made inferior to the rest of the churches, except it be that I myself was not a burden to you? Forgive me this wrong. Of course, Paul's talking to the Corinthians, and he's had some of these same other issues, you know, that they're trying to undermine it. He's telling him he's, well, stop myself. Y'all would just answer the questions. So what did Paul give preference to these men, and how did Paul, based on the verses in Galatians and current Corinthians, where did he place himself with respect to the apostles?
No, he did not give preference.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he says he's to the very least of these, and he felt inferior to them.
No,
he was equal.
Yes. He was not. His
right.
Hypothetical question. He is not inferior to them. He is equal to the apostles. Also, when you're looking at Galatians, some of the key verses there, like in verse 6. Of course, this is in discussion of the topic that's under discussion. But at the end of that verse in 6, it says, I said, those who were of repute imparted nothing to me. They did not give him any further knowledge which he did not already possess. You know, he did not. They are not guiding him. They're not instructing him. He's not learning from them. He, you know, they're equals. He already had what they had. And also, if you look at verse 9, I'd like to see verse 9. Verse 8, it says, "For he that wrought for Peter unto the apostleship of the circumcision wrought for me also unto the Gentiles." How is he comparing himself here to Peter?
They just had a different audience.
That's correct.
A different audience.
Peter was an apostleship to the Gentiles. And Paul was the same, except, I'm just going to set it up. Peter was an apostleship to the Jews. Paul was the apostleship to the Gentiles. He was on a direct level with Peter, just to a different audience, as Mike suggested. You have any comment?
We have an expression. And we may be talking about some individual and say, well, he puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like I do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this distinction does exist.
Correct, yeah.
Lisa,
yes?
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, I was kept thinking about in chapter 1, verse 15 and 16, you know, when he talks about, you know, please God to separate him from his mother's womb, and to reveal his son in me, you know, not saying he thinks he's above the other apostles, but, you know, like you said, that he is at least equal, you know, that, you know, he took him to preach to the Gentiles, you know, and everything like that. So I was just thinking of those verses, those kind of say the same thing.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, he's gonna recycle a little bit in thought, because the thought keeps coming back. He's showing in different manners how he is equal. You know, we look back there, how he's equal there was his origin as an apostle, his authority as an apostle. Here, he's looking at the knowledge aspect. In knowledge, he is equal to the apostles.
Reputation is a human construct, and it's developed through observing from human to human. But apostle and elder is a God construct. It's a God-ordained position. And someone can have the position of an apostle or an elder and be abusing that position, and their reputation can be bad even though they have a good position. So, to put it into our application, we can't allow people's reputations that we've developed just by our observance or other people's observance affect how we communicate to them. And, well, you know, we show respect, but that doesn't mean we alter the truth, or, you know, succumb or cower before someone with reputation. Position and reputation, just the difference there is the construct behind it.
Correct. Yeah, it's all about the construct. And I had some other verses I want to look at, just how God respects the preferences of men as they give rank and reputation. Because I'm not going to say that there aren't people of authority. God appointed apostles. God appointed elders. Those are people of authority in a form, in a hierarchy that is a rank. But here we're talking, I think what Paul is pointing out is rank and reputation as men bestow it, not as God has bestowed it, and how that influences what is taught, what is the truth. Reputation can affect the truth. I saw several hands go up. Linda.
Early on, if we go back to Acts 8, we also see among Peter and James and the other apostles, when Paul goes into Jerusalem and Barnabas takes him to them because he wanted to join himself to the church there, they were afraid of him. But then, after Barnabas explains, then he's able to move about, he's teaching boldly, even to the Jews. He's arguing with the Hellenistic Jews. And so, by his conduct and by their accepting him in the church, these apostles give him, you know, the same equality. You know, they don't probably look at him as an inferior out there doing their bidding. You know, he's sent by God, and he's out there preaching the same gospel.
Yes, yes, he is. There's another hand.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, I find it interesting. Like, on one hand, he does place himself in 2 Corinthians 12. On one hand, he does place himself equal to the apostles. But then on the other hand, he even says, even though I am a nobody. And so I just find that interesting that, no, I'm not better, no, I'm not less, but I'm still a nobody. And it's...
Because there's like, a different aspect.
Yeah.
He's been given authority, but at the same time, he has to realize he can't allow pride mm-hmm. to then influence what he thinks of himself.
Right.
Betty, did you have a comment?
I don't think Paul meant that he shouldn't have a higher reputation as far as the world. He just meant they're not any better, you know, as far as the gospel, they're not any better than anybody else. And he was saying that he was an apostle as they were, so... I don't think he was saying that people shouldn't put them in high esteem. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree with you. Is that apostles had rank, but you know, rank and reputation that men give, you know, as Steve mentioned before, people, congregations follow preachers sometimes. Should they? If they're teaching the truth, they should. Preacher's teaching the truth, yes, but if the preacher's not teaching the truth, they shouldn't. And
they
people
should.
Still do because of reputation, because of perceived reputation rank they put on him. And Paul is weaving through that, disseminating between God's authority, between the truth being taught, and between how men bestow rank. Rod, did you raise your hand quickly?
Yeah, just a quick comment. I mean, the reputation is also in verse 2. We've been looking primarily at verses 6 and 9, but...
Yes, you had the meeting with those in repeat.
Yeah, so I think this kind of ties in with everything being said, is that, and I don't want to read too much in this verse, but it may be that the reason that meeting occurred was out of respect for men of reputation. I know Paul went in boldly, but there's still a process to use, even though you're pretty bold. He took Titus with him, has no problem defending his position, but still, there's an aspect of respect and process and how you go about doing this. He didn't go in with guns blazing.
Yeah.
But we don't know exactly how he did go in. But
we have, slight clues. Yeah, it may have been out of respect. And also, like I said, getting alignment with key people and then representing a unified front to the entire assembly is certainly going to line everybody up. And, like I said, and that's conjecture. I mean, I didn't say that, but we're conjecturing from men's minds how things work. Because this is, as we discussed, this was a meeting of men and using their minds to logically reason out the truth. And we've, they had to go through the right things, because sometimes even, engineering in meetings, there might be something that is the right path, but if not presented properly, will not be the chosen path. If it's not, have alignment, if you don't have everyone on board, and if it's not communicated effectively.
I also think that Paul was trying to make sure what he was preaching and teaching was in accordance with those that were there in Jerusalem.
Yes. And then as the ultimate goal is get anyone lined up with the truth, correct? And that's mainly the discussion of Acts 15 that here is brought up in regards to his position in it.
And I think that's why it's important that the Holy Spirit chose Peter to say, because he was the pillar. He was the Jews, pillar. And when Peter said that God made no distinction between us and the Gentiles, and that we're by grace through faith, that congealed the idea. I mean, you got Peter saying this, and this is what Paul is preaching. And so that is, they're apostle of repute. And then the other one gets up, James, and he talks. And so you have the conclusion based on these two very important apostles of the Jewish mind saying this.
Yes. That's correct. That's why everyone together, and Paul was there amongst them. But I want to reiterate again, Paul's position within it wasn't relying upon, he's the major authority, we got to do because he says so. He was equal to Peter. And it requires all of them at Jerusalem to be lined up and then allow everyone else to believe and follow in suit. But here Paul is showing his own position within that meeting. And it wasn't Paul being inferior to Peter. Paul is equal to Peter. Did I see one more hand?
I was just going to mention that I agree with Rod. First of all, he did it out of respect to talk to him, repeating people up there first. But also in the fact that had he gone up there to speak for the congregation and didn't know whether the rest of the apostles agreed with him or not, would have been chaotic.
Yes, that's the same thing.
Chaotic had they not understood the scripture and agreed, so to speak, with Paul or the gospel. So he had to know up front that they were all together. Because if he had just gone up there and talked, it would have been awful if they didn't agree with him.
Yeah, that's what I said. That may have been the reason for that earlier meeting. And it may not have been, but it certainly, in men's minds, how it works. So the end result of the council is well known in Acts 15. I think I had two end results. The end result of Acts 15 was circumcision is not required. We see that in Galatians 2:9 and Acts 15:24-29. That circumcision wasn't required. But here in Galatians, there is another aspect that is pointed out as well, and that is besides everyone coming to that conclusion, which Paul is in full agreement with, there also is agreement on Paul's position and his authority to the Gentiles. When we read Galatians 2:9, and it said, when they perceived the grace that was given unto me, James, Cephas, and John, who were reputed to be pillars, gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the Gentiles, and they unto the circumcision. And so here is this, they're in fellowship with them, they're respecting the apostles who are going unto the Jews, and that now Paul is going to go unto the Gentiles. There's this idea of equality. I said Acts 15:24-29. That's a good stopping place, though. Because next time, Paul will go into another discussion about Peter on a different occasion. I want to commend you all, too, because everyone spoke up a lot this morning. I appreciate that.